Welcome to He Saw, She Saw.
If you're just joining us, I am Corey.
And I am Keith.
And I am Isla.
And we love movies.
Just not the same ones.
So we make each other watch a movie that we love.
But the other would never watch unless we were doing a podcast.
And then we talk about it. So we have a little guest. She's on the floor playing on her device right now.
Yeah.
It's a tablet.
It's a tablet. And she said, oh yeah, I'll be quiet. So that's working out real well.
Well, she did for a few minutes. And then... came time to introduce herself. Nothing wrong with that.
So we're watching some movies.
Yes, we are.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to talk about my movie first, huh?
Yes.
So you get to watch A View from the Top, and it stars Gwyneth Paltrow, and it has Mark Ruffalo. Also has Christina Applegate, Kelly Preston, Candace Bergen, Rob Lowe, Mike Myers is in it. So, you know, just a real embarrassment of riches, if you will,
in the cast. That's my line.
I know it is. I wanted to say something smart this time. So, yeah, it's just like a fun movie that you pop in, you know, for a good time.
All right.
Although Christina Applegate does play someone who you're like,
I feel like Christina Applegate is a lot like Jason Bateman.
Like, oh, yes.
She can either play the most snarkiest, you know, evil person, or she can play someone you really get behind.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yes. You know, I really wish that we could watch The Switch because I love that movie.
Ugh.
You could watch it from the hallway. And then you're going to make me hold my eyeballs open and watch.
The Avengers. And not the Sean Connery, Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman vehicle. But the movie that really kicked off the Marvel Cinematic Universe and showed like, oh, we can actually take these heroes. Yeah. And throw them together in a movie. And it can be just as entertaining.
Well, I just want to say that there has just been no better time because I just got fitted for new contact lenses. And one eye sees reading things and one eye sees all things.
Far things, yeah.
And I'm still getting used to it. So this is a perfect time to watch this movie because if I don't want to watch it, I'll just close an eye.
Wow.
I'm not very excited about this one.
That's our charm, is that.
Oh, we have charm?
I hope so. Let's get through A View from the Top so I can watch The Avengers.
It's not a through. It's a get to enjoy.
Avengers Assemble!
Okay. Did you enjoy the flight?
A View from the Top.
What is that?
I was trying to do over the top and it didn't quite work.
No, it's okay. I do little theme songs that I make up all the time. Our daughter apparently makes up songs all day long. Her teacher told me, yeah, she sings a lot. And then her teacher caught me singing and she went,
Anyway. Well, before I get into how I thought this movie went, how did you think this movie went?
You know, I realize that it's not an important movie whatsoever. It's probably not even a very good movie, but I enjoy it. I forgot there's this move that they do. The three, they like smack their hip. And that's what me and my two friends, we used to do that all the time. It's just, I'm just afraid you're going to eviscerate it. It's just a feel-good movie that has good memories for me.
All right.
So do you have a pitch for this movie?
I do. A trailer park girl from small city Nevada chases her dream of being an airline stewardess. Will she crash and burn? Or will she get A View from the Top?
You can't hear it, but I'm rolling my eyes.
Oh, I think we can all hear it.
Because you insist on putting the name of the movie in the pitch.
Come on now.
And then I absolutely refuse.
And I usually add at the end.
I know you do.
Aw.
Sometimes I leave it in. Sometimes I cut it out.
You love me.
Yes, I do.
So our story is narrated by Donna, played by Gwyneth Paltrow. And it opens in Silver Springs, Nevada, where Donna lives in a trailer with her mom, who's an ex-showgirl, and a string of loser ex-husbands, basically. She thinks she strikes gold when she starts dating the high school quarterback. Not only is he the high school quarterback, but he's got a job at Big Lots. And so he uses his pull to get her a job in luggage. And
did you know Big Lots had, like, sections with salespeople?
I think Big Lots used to be Pick and Save, didn't it?
Yeah.
It did
not have people, like, in departments, not the department store.
I barely have any memories of Pick and
Save. You know what my dad used to call Pick and Save? Pick and Flick.
Pick and Flick. Oh, that makes sense.
And that's where they would take us so that we could buy our own presents for like Christmas and stuff, because we didn't have, you know, we were kids, we just had allowance money.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything at Pick and Save was like super cheap, so mm-hmm. we would buy everybody's Christmas presents at Pick and Save.
I think it's just meant to like reinforce how small the town is, where like Big Lots is the big department
That's
store.
The place to go.
And that does tend to happen in small towns, where like, you know, a store which normally wouldn't be a big deal becomes a big deal because it's like the only store. Because yeah.
Where else are you going to go?
Yeah. So she thinks she's going to hitch her wagon
to a rising star.
To a rising star quarterback. Except when he gets the big promotion to Tucson, he decides to take Brenda and barbecues instead of her. And just to reinforce how classy he is, he breaks up with her in a birthday card. So,
well, they don't make breaking up cards.
Yeah, that's what he says. So she's heartbroken and goes to the local bar. She's drinking a beer, taking down her vision board, when suddenly...
Because she quit. Because so she's she quit, cleaning out her
she
locker.
She is depressed, feeling sorry for herself. And on the TV is a talk show, because we're day drinking, we think. Yeah. And it's like a Oprah type show, just generic Oprah show. But the person who's there as a guest is Sally Weston, played by Candace Bergen. And she plays a former airline stewardess who is like the best airline stewardess ever in the world, who has gone on to be like a personality and so on and so forth. And she's got a new book. And so she's talking about how
my life in the sky.
She was from a small town, and you know what? No one thought she could do anything, but she could. And if you're in a small town, I just want you to know you can do it too. And Gwyneth Paltrow's like, how? And she says, you got to buy my book. So
I thought that was cute.
Donna is like full hook, line, and sinker. She buys the book, reads it, and is determined that she is going to be an airline stewardess. But she can't go to work at the biggest and the best, so she goes to work at the smallest and the worst. And they have a very cute interview with Sierra Airlines, where they very much established, like, this is for drunks. This is for bad gamblers.
Big gambling problem.
You know, it's like they have one route to Fresno. And she's like, yeah, but you do once a week to Bakersfield.
Ugh.
And you know it's classy because she's wearing like this 60s like go-go dancer with the boots type of outfit.
Big and hair. The she's... model's big hair and...
Big hair, short skirts.
Yes, that's what it was. Oh, and don't forget that the plane looks like the inside of a scary van because there's shag carpet on the walls.
Oh, yeah. She knows where it is and she's like, okay, you got to start somewhere. And so she really wants to do well, but she's really nervous. And it's okay, though, because she has a mentor.
Who is
Sherry, played wonderfully by Kelly Preston.
Oh,
and she's just one of those.
I love her.
She is wonderful in the role.
She's like surrogate mom.
Yeah. Mm. I'm pretty. I'm a little older, but I'm pretty. I know what I'm doing. You don't want to mess with me.
And I will help you out.
And
she says things like sugar.
Yeah. And so they're getting ready for the flight, and Sherry's trying to calm her down, and Gwyneth has like her book out and she's doing the checklist and things get going and things start to take
I'm
off.
Doing okay.
Yeah. And that's when Sherry's cue to go like, oh, have you flown before? And she's like, sure. And she totally hasn't. And so she completely stage 5 freak out, gets out. We're going to crash. I'm running up and down the aisle and freaking everyone out. And the cut to the end of the flight, where she's just morose, hands over her face, head down. And good old Rob Lowe's in this movie.
Oh my God,
he had a quick cameo a little bit earlier trying to say, hey, you're going to do okay.
Yeah.
And then he just talks her down. He says, yeah, you're going places. And she's like, how do you know? And he's like, well, I'm a pilot. It's my job to know where everyone's going to go.
I'm going to cry.
And so
it's like surrogate dad, surrogate mom.
Ugh. Yeah. He's got like 5 lines in the movie and he's excellent.
Yeah.
Sure enough, next scene, she's fine. So she has turned it all around and she actually has her own trainee now, who is Christina Applegate, who's playing Christine. Things are going well in between these routes. For fun, one of the things they do is they go houseboating. So these 3 girls are now inseparable. In Lake Havasu.
Mm-hmm.
They're just living the houseboat life.
I've always wanted to like rent a houseboat on a lake.
At my college, what all the fraternities would do and sororities is we would each rent houseboats.
Oh,
hang
so
out. And
you've done this before?
Yeah, not on Lake Havasu. So they're all just hanging out, mm-hmm. getting some sun. And Gwyneth Paltrow's
tanning with baby oil.
Yeah, that's
great.
Because
we didn't know yet, I guess. 2003.
Yeah.
We knew.
Yeah, we knew, but didn't care. We're especially the young stage.
Yeah,
so
we don't care.
Gwyneth Paltrow's her clasp breaks on her swimsuit. So she goes down to try to find a safety pin. And as she's down in the bathroom, Mark Ruffalo shows up. His name is Ted in this movie. And he's like with Lake Patrol. Very unofficial type of Lake Patrol. He says, hey, I'm just looking for my flare gun that your boyfriend borrowed. And so Sherry's like, oh, well, he's probably downstairs.
You can go find him.
Yeah. And so Ted gets on the boat, finds the flare pretty quickly, and then hears someone in the bathroom. And so he thinks it's his buddy, and he's got a flare gun. And so what do you do when you're a boy in your early 20s and you've got a gun and a buddy is going to the bathroom? You kick the bathroom door in to try to surprise him.
Freeze!
And of course, he walks right into Gwyneth Paltrow. She's working on the clasp, but everything's covered.
Away.
Yes. So. Yes. Very tastefully done. But we know immediately that Ted's a good guy, because as soon as he does, he's like, oh, I'm so sorry.
He closes his eyes.
And Donna's like, well, I'm just trying to work on my clasp. And he's like, oh, I can help with that. And he immediately goes and finds a bread tie or something and fixes her clasp. Very immediately, they're both a little smitten with each other. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, want to have a tour?
Well, it's his official business.
It's his official business to take her on a tour of Lake Havasu. And Christine, being clueless, says, hey, can I come along? And they're both like, I guess.
She's being super flirty.
Yeah, she's being as flirty as possible, embarrassingly throwing herself. Yeah. And Ted just is like, oh, that's nice. And we find out that Ted was a law student, doing really well, just a little bit away from graduating.
Semester left.
And he just was like, what am I doing? I'm like, my life is over before it begun. Do I really want to do this? And so he's kind of been bumming around because, hey, it's nice to be white in your early 20s and rich in
bumming
the United States. So you can just bum around if you want. So that's promising. And then we move to the three stewardesses. They were hanging out in one of their stops. And they see three stewardesses for another airline.
A classy airline.
I don't think it's royalty. I think it's a different one.
It's a different one. Yeah.
But it's very clear, and they're like talking about Chanel.
Oh, yes.
And they're
Louis Vuitton and Chanel. And
our three heroes are like, and the other stewardesses could not be bothered to even acknowledge their existence.
They're too busy trashing the pit stop that they've been dumped at, and they say that they feel like they need a flea dip.
Exactly. So Donna, never to take this lying down, waits for them to go and says, you know what? They're not better than us. And says, bam, and puts an ad on the counter for Royalty Airlines, which is the airlines that Sally Weston has evidently started. Never really clear in the movie.
She worked for Royalty back in the old days. And she's the honorary, probably the honorary spokesperson now because of her book and everything.
Her husband is so rich, and the way it's kind of established is like, it's really her airline. And so she's like, look, they're hiring, and San Francisco is the hub, so we should go for it. Are you with me? And so, of course, we have a road trip, and so all three girls go.
Living on a prayer.
And this is where we run into Michael Myers, who plays this very over-the-top character, John Whitney.
Not Michael Myers, because that's a murderer. Mike Myers.
Mike Myers, yes. Who can only see out of his horribly nearsighted left eye. And this is one of those things where I was just like, am I allowed to laugh at this? He does it for complete comedic effect. Mm-hmm. And he's successful in his job. He's really good at what he does. Mm-hmm. But he just has this physical comedy is just over the top.
Every
time he looks at something. It's just very funny. So I don't think that's offensive, but it might be.
He has strabismus. There's no business like strabismus.
Yeah, he goes through this interview. Donna and Christine make it, but unfortunately, Sherry is freaked out by the eye and doesn't. So Gwyneth is ecstatic. She goes back and she's on a date with Ted, and they're talking about it, you know, how exciting it is and how much Ted believes in her. And the problem is they come to the end of the dinner and they're about to kiss, and he's like, you know, the only thing left for us is a goodbye kiss. Mm. And that's not my favorite type. And Donna's like, me neither. And so they shake hands and wish each other luck. So we now are with Donna and Christine at stewardess school. And again, Mike Myers is just hilarious throughout this. He keeps getting everyone's names wrong. And Donna is ecstatic to learn that they are going to get to go to a dinner hosted by Sally Weston in her mansion. Her and Sally hit it right off. And Sally is like, I totally see myself in you. You just have to make sure nothing gets in your way.
You want Paris first class.
Say it with me. So we have this training montage. And of course, Donna ends up is doing great. And Christine is struggling. We get to the big final test. Christine is still really nervous, and Donna nails it, and they turn it in, and the next day they get the results. Christine got the New York prized hub. Donna gets the worst route, the Royalty Air Express, based out of Cleveland. And she is so bummed. She worked so hard. She's just like, what happened? There must have been a mistake.
Yeah, because Christine struggled through the whole training program.
Did about as well on the stewardess school as she did hitting on Ted. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just no way she should have done well. So she talks to everybody she can. Sally Weston's like, well, you know, you got a year. You can do it for a year.
Mike Myers says, no, you can't see your test. You can't retest. You can reapply in a year for the better route.
There's nothing she can do, so she's in Cleveland.
She's not happy.
And she is not happy at all. But interestingly, when she's at a restaurant, she runs into Ted.
Such a funny scene. He says, hey, can I have this chair? And she said, yeah. And she's not paying attention. So then he goes to take the chair she's sitting on. Mm-hmm. And she's like, ah! And then she realizes it's him.
Yeah, it was very cute. And so they're excited to see each other. And he's like, oh, I just needed a chair for my partner over there. And Donna's like, oh, she's pretty. And he's like, no. Study partner. Because what's happened is Ted is from Cleveland, which we learned earlier. Mm-hmm. And so he is back in law school, and he wanted to be closer to his parents and his family, which he realizes is uncool, but it's true. Donna is reinvigorated. She's like, okay, tell you what, Cleveland is just like a waiting room, and so we're just going to do the best we can, and then we'll move on with our lives. And so they have a cute montage of them, you know, dating for months, and then they get to Christmas, and of course Donna's killing it at work and Ted is doing really well. We get to Christmas. Donna is invited to Christmas with Ted's family, and she's very nervous because her family life was not good. Sure enough, Ted does not have a crazy family. It's very cute, and he gives her a very sweet watch so that she can know what time it is in Cleveland.
It's two watch faces, so she can do two time zones.
Yeah, so where they're departing, where they're arriving. And the family also gets her their family Christmas sweater that they're all wearing. So things are going really well with Ted. And then, lo and behold, Christine has a stopover in Cleveland. She has to stay there for the night. Donna's like, of course, you got to hang out with me and Ted. And so they're over at their place. And Christina's like, oh, yeah, no, Donna really got me through stewardess school. And I just think, what would Donna do? And she talks about this semi-complicated procedure, and she gives completely the wrong answer. And of course, Donna is horrified because
that was the last question on the final.
Ted asks for like just some flight wings for one of his nephews. And so Christine does the high class thing and just empties out her purse all over the couch.
The thing that I like to do that you hate that I do.
You have not done it in a very long time.
Because you don't like it.
I do not.
I used, ladies and gentlemen, before Keith, I would just, if I needed something and I couldn't find it, I would just dump my purse out on the ground no matter where I was.
Yeah, parking lot.
Yeah. Well,
sidewalk. Yeah. She empties out basically a store of Royalty Airline stuff, of like beauty masks and vodka and tonic and
headphones,
and finally finds a pilot pin. And Donna is again horrified again, because we've already established earlier in the movie, you cannot, as a stewardess, you cannot take anything from Royalty Free Airlines. Yeah, so
even little things.
Yeah, so like at the mansion party, Christine had stolen some soap made to look like airplanes that they had in the guest bathroom. Donna cannot let it go. So she figures out a way to visit Sally. And as she visits Sally, she kind of goes through what's going on.
Well, she can fly wherever. So she flies out there.
Yeah. So they're meeting in person. And she's like, well, there's nothing we could do, is there? And she's like, no. And she's like, I really want to see that test. Like, because the computer could have messed up. And they're like, no, it's hand graded. So Sally picks up the phone to get a look at the super secret test, because she's basically in charge of the company. According to the movie. And so
like
they finally...
your grandmother after she sold the candy factory. And
so my great-grandfather started the Hammond Candy Factory in Denver, Colorado. And so when I took Corey to it a few years ago, while we were still dating, mm-hmm. my grandma was still alive. And so we were going to do the tour, because I'd never done the tour.
Like the regular people.
So we're in this room with like 20 to 30 people watching this video.
They did a Food Network show about it.
Yeah, I think this one was an in-house documentary, but...
Yeah.
So, anyway, we get about 30 seconds through the documentary, and suddenly there's like a rumbling in the room, because everyone keeps looking at the screen, looking at my grandma.
Because they're interviewing her.
Because they're interviewing my grandma's talking about it, and she's just like... She did not say, oh, hell. But she basically...
my crying out loud.
Grandma just kind of was like, and just rolled her eyes and said, okay, let's go.
We're going to jump this tour.
Everyone else stayed in the room, and Corey and I were ushered into the main production facility because Grandma June was tired of the documentary. So anyway, Sally is like, okay, let's see the test. And so when they see the test, they realize Christine switched the numbers. So she got Donna's, and then Donna had her number. Plus, she has this distinct, like, she puts hearts over the eye, over her eyes, so it's very clear. When you look at it, it's like, oh, that's Christine.
Well, they make a big deal in the beginning. Like, oh, that's so cute. You write your eyes. You dot your eyes with little hearts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then we know that it's Christine.
That and her hickeys are evidently Christine's two big talents. So.
Trademark.
Yeah. No, she's very proud of it. And so at that point, Sally is looking at the answers like, oh, my gosh. And she is like.
Because it's like run and scream, you're going to die as an answer.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe we put you in Cleveland. That was being generous. And Sally starts putting it together and like, wait, I bet you she's stealing. And like puts two to two together about how there were airline soaps at her mansion that went missing because Christine just took them. And so they must be rubbing us blind. And so she's like, okay, they're retesting next week. Mm-hmm. So you're going to do that. So what ends up happening is they have like loss prevention on Christine's next flight. And she's like taking about seven tequilas. And so she gets arrested and fired immediately as soon as she lands. And so Donna goes home and Ted is ecstatic because he is just tested top of his class. And
They're both achievers.
She's explaining to him that I was right about the test. And it's like, oh, that's awesome. Let's go celebrate. And she's like, yes, but I'm taking the test tomorrow. And if I do well, I'm not coming back to Cleveland because I'll be stationed somewhere else. And so she basically breaks up with him because I've come so far and worked so hard. I can't let anybody stop me from fulfilling basically my potential. So she's like, look, we've talked about it. It's like Cleveland's a waiting room. He's like, a waiting room for you.
The waiting room was my life before you or something like that.
Yeah, it was very cute. Mm-hmm. And so, but
and
Donna,
you're like, Donna, no!
And so Donna's like, I still gotta do it.
I gotta go!
Gotta do it. Donna goes ahead, takes her test, aces it, is the first person to ace a test since Mike Myers took it 7 years before. And so he's bitter because his eye has caused him to not be able to be a flight attendant, which again, I mean, super sweet guy, obviously knows everything, but it's like, if you have that issue, you can understand why you couldn't have that job. You could have other jobs like being an instructor. And so Donna, before she leaves, just says, you know what? I seriously couldn't have done this without you.
Aww.
Like, you are the reason why I was able to do this. And so Mike Myers is like, oh, get out of here.
I loved him as a disgruntled passenger.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a little vest that says, like, disgruntled passenger.
Yeah. So Donna goes very quick. She either is immediately placed on international flights or within, I guess, weeks or something, gets into international flights. And so she's getting to live her best life.
Makes it to Paris.
Yeah, goes to Paris, goes to Lisbon, goes to London, goes to all these places. And as she's going, she conveniently has newspaper clips from Cleveland saying that Ted is also doing successful. But it's just,
I wondered about that. I was like, did his mom send that to her? Or did she get the Cleveland newspaper?
I mean, from my former life in PR during that time, there were ways to do it, but it was a little difficult.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It's not like the internet where you just look someone's name up.
Exactly. Donna is clearly having just some second thoughts. I mean, she's loving her life and things are going really well. And again, she's a model. And so she ends up taking a flight to Paris on Christmas. And she spends Christmas in Paris. And it's just not enough.
It reminded me of the year that I got divorced. I didn't want to be around for the holidays. Mm-hmm. So I took a European bus tour, and it was me and my two friends and like 50 drunk Australians.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Paris for New Year's Eve. So I was actually at the Eiffel Tower at New Year's Eve. The second that it turned midnight, all these men immediately were dropping to their knees and like proposing to to their girlfriends. Like,
I'm guessing that
all around me,
the tower is sparkling.
The tower was sparkling. So I was like, oh yeah, I've been there.
Aww.
That's okay, because then I came home and a couple of months later we got to start dating.
Yay.
So
yeah, I was wondering,
actually, it was a month later.
Yeah, about that. Because we waited till February.
Valentine's Day is our is the day that my divorce was final, and it was our first date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
she's feeling like, oh, okay, this should be really romantic, but it's not. And so she's in the lounge waiting for a flight home that she's going to work on, and she runs into Sally Weston because, of course, she's just, you know, hey.
Oh, I spend Christmas in Paris.
We just spend Christmas in Paris and New Year's in London or something like that, because that's just what we do. But Sally, well, she sees right through Donna's fake smile and is like, okay, what's really going on?
Oh, she says, us stewardesses have a nasty habit that we've picked up from work. We smile even though we're out of Bloody Mary mix.
Mm-hmm. And so Donna's like, well, you remember that guy, Ted? And she's like, well, of course. I had to break up with him. And Sally's like, what? You need a co-pilot. What are you going to do? Gwen's like, oh, it's too late. And Sally's like,
Last time I checked, you were a girl who could make things happen.
Exactly.
That's what makes me cry.
And so, Donna and Sally both have the flights for Royalty Air memorized because they're twins at this point. So they realize that Donna can make it to Cleveland, but immediately she's got to switch. And Donna's about to go and she's like, wait a second, but who am I going to get to cover my shift? And Sally has been waiting for this moment. And she's like, oh, don't you worry. I still give the best airline speech in the
world. Well, she invented the two fingers. Exits are this way and this way. Before that, they just pointed.
Exactly.
True story.
She looks over at the guy behind the counter. Is like, I'm going to need a stewardess uniform. Stat. And so,
Pierre, I'm going to need a uniform.
Yeah, because she owns Ireland, basically. Donna rushes to Cleveland, goes to Ted's house. It's the day after Christmas. And she knocks on the door. And we're in the Midwest. So since no one answers, she just opens the door to go in.
Just walks in.
She walks in and there's just grandma who's hard of hearing and we don't know, might have other cognitive issues. They never really delve into it. She's just kind of taking down the Christmas tree and Donna's just like, I screwed up and I thought it'd be worth it and it totally wasn't and I can't believe I missed it. And then grandma looks up and is like, who are you? and Donna's like, oh, you didn't hear a thing I said, did you? And then Ted from upstairs says, but I did.
I did.
And walks down the stairs. Is like, are you really going to be happy in Cleveland? Really, really? And she's like, yes. And so they kiss. And so we have the last narration of the movie. And we have this typical tracking shot where we kind of start in the cabin. Mm-hmm. And we kind of go up from the back of the plane up
dolly
to the front
shot.
Of the plane. Yeah, dolly shot going up. But this time, instead of stopping with the stewardesses, it goes past the stewardesses. And guess what? Donna isn't a stewardess anymore. She's the woman driving in the cockpit.
Which was a little over the top.
Slightly.
I was like, no.
But that's the end of the movie.
I mean, I know that part's ridiculous.
Well,
she like winks at the camera because she's the captain.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of like, I honestly don't know what the uniform is, but.
It's not that. It's like the Halloween costume girl pilot outfit.
Kind of, yeah. So I think a lot of people did a good job in this movie. My only thing with Sally Weston was at the end where she had the stewardess uniform. Like, it's just that type of movie where it looked a little kind of frumpy on her. You can't tell me Sally Weston wouldn't have in her go bag a tailored uniform that would make her look, again, and it would probably be different than the typical uniform, but it would be, you can't tell me she wouldn't be dressed to the nines immediately if she was doing a flight. So. Mm-hmm. The soundtrack was like, I'm always a sucker for Time After Time, even if it wasn't the Cyndi Lauper version.
When I heard it, I was like, oh, he's going to love this movie.
Yeah, that song. Yeah, I don't know what it is about that song, but I absolutely love it. And we got like Living on a Prayer. And
we got Journeys, Don't Stop Believing.
It is so. But yeah, I mean, the thing to understand is that this movie is completely unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a fairy tale. Just everything goes Donna's way. I know that there is a lot of hate for this movie. Like, one of our favorite comedians, Richard Ayoade, has literally made a 279-page book.
It's a 4-hour audiobook.
Oh, you've heard of it.
Downloaded this morning. I'm surprised you're mentioning this because it's going to be my little surprise, but apparently I already know about it because you're smarty pants.
Oh, I was going to buy it for your birthday. So, okay, good to know.
I did a free audiobook trial so that I could listen to it. And I listened to about a half hour of it this morning.
How is it? Is it funny?
It's pretty funny. Actually, I wrote down a quote for you.
Okay.
It says, "This is not just a book about a movie, about a journey. It's also a book about my/our journey with that movie, about a journey. A journey soundtracked by the sweet, soft rock sounds of Journey." Oh. Anyways.
I saw him on the Graham Norton show talk about it, too.
And I had no idea until I looked it up. I was like, Richard Iowati's my favorite British person.
He makes a very good point about how, like, basically, it's all about privilege. And it's like, all you need to do is work hard. And then, you know, as long as you're skinny and you're pretty and you don't have an eye issue and you don't have too much weight. Yeah.
And then you can get a better job in the service industry.
Exactly. That's what he says. Yeah. So
you should listen. It's really funny. We have 30 days.
Yeah. There you go. All I've got to say to Richard Iowati is two thumbs up.
To him?
To him. Because, yes, it's a horrible movie. It is so bad it's good. Mm-hmm. It's like...
But not like in the Room type of way.
Yeah. It's like, it's, you know, this is before Gwyneth Paltrow was...
Annoying.
Insufferable. She's really good in this movie. And her and Mark Ruffalo have great chemistry.
Yep.
Mark Ruffalo is great. And like, but every... I mean, Christina Applegate is always amazing. Like, like, yes. I don't care what she's in.
Nope. Yep.
Christina Applegate is amazing. But Kelly Preston was amazing.
I love her.
Yeah. And Rob Lowe was amazing. Now, to be truthful, if Gwyneth Paltrow, Mark Ruffalo, and Christina Applegate aren't in it, it's probably worse than Hallmark movie. It's not even by the numbers. It's like by the numbers with the lines drawn in. Like, you know what's going to happen.
Color by numbers.
And sometimes that's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, and as a teacher, sometimes I see stories like Donna. Someone comes into the room. They have a bad view of themselves.
Aww.
They don't think they can do it. And then, you know, they get somebody who helps them. A little bit.
Then you tell them scaffold. That they can.
I tell them they can, mm-hmm. and then we scaffold and we help them. And by the time they leave the class, they're amazing. Oh, yeah. And like, so.
And I know this because I was at school with you the last few days, and mm-hmm. you had several kids lined up wanting to tell you how much you meant to them. And it made me cry.
You know, yes, the journey is very sophomoric that like Donna's going through. But when you're on the journey, it's the most important journey you can take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's like.
It's also important to have journey playing.
That is helpful.
So what do you give it? What's your rating?
I said two thumbs up.
Oh, you did? I didn't even hear.
You did?
When did you
do missed that? I said, Richard Iotti, I only have one thing to say to you. Two thumbs up.
Yo, to him?
Yeah.
About his book. That's what I thought you were talking about.
No, I meant that this movie gets two thumbs
up. Oh, that's so very nice.
Yeah.
That caught me off guard because it was way too early and I thought you were saying two thumbs up to Richard Iowati. I hope you've enjoyed this flight. And remember, the last person off has to clean the plane. Avengers from the top.
Wow. Didn't know where that came from.
I'm trying to go with the theme because I know you like a good theme.
Over the top is a good theme?
No, View from the Top, you did... Never mind.
All right.
Let's just move on.
So we saw the Avengers.
Is there a Cliff Notes for the MCU?
Oh, there would have to be so many at this point. But yeah, there actually, now that I think about it, yeah, they probably have... Usually on Disney Plus, they'll have a little like, hey, remember all this stuff before you watch Doctor Strange 2?
Oh, like previously on?
Yeah, basically.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
I should probably invest in a book form of like a... Cliff's Notes, if we're going to be doing this.
Well, what I find so funny is people keep saying like, oh my gosh, we have to watch so many movies to understand. And it's like, that's what being a comic geek is you pick up a comic and then you have to go, oh crap, there are 80 years of continuity, which I don't know. Welcome to geekdom. Mm. It's a fun place to be.
I know, I don't even have to ask. How did this movie hold up for you, Keith?
I thought it was a good movie. The problem is they spend half the movie getting people to work together. It's why, like in Hulk movies, you just start with the Hulk because no one cares that Banner doesn't want to be the Hulk. You just want to see Hulk smash. So overall, it's still a good movie. There are a couple issues with it. It's the best Loki movie, I think.
Nice. I forgot to do a pitch for this movie because I just had so much research that I had to go through. So I guess I'm just going to improvise. So we'll see if I'm a good improviser or not. So a group of misfit superheroes form a team of Avengers to defeat Loki and his diabolical multi-universe destroying scheme.
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah?
And you used Avengers in the pitch. Woohoo!
Yeah, that was just me improvising. It's just me.
It's one of the things you do.
It's one of the things I do. So I'm not going to talk about everything.
Oh.
And I know you're going to want me to talk about certain things.
Is that my job?
If no.
To bring up every detail that you don't bring up?
It's not your job.
Okay.
Because I'm telling you right now is that, you know, there's going to be things. There's going to be a lot that I would love to talk about, but it just there's too much going on. There's too much going on. So with that, here we go.
All right.
So we start off, we see this blue flame or like haze or smoke or mist. And in my head, I was like, oh, that's like that blue cube thingy. And you were like, do you remember the blue cube thing? And I was like, okay, so that's the blue cube thing. You kind of answered my questions a little more this time because I was very frustrated.
There was steam coming from ears at different parts of this movie.
It's not going to take away from the entertainment value, I don't think, because I'm still confused. So don't worry about it. So Loki is taking a meeting with an alien called the Other. And the whole time I was watching the other people, I was like trying to figure out what they were. Because they like seem like they're organic, but then they also seem like they're animal or machine or I don't know. It's just funny. I know I said it, I think, in Thor, where like whenever there's an alien race, they all look identical and they all have the same outfit.
Well, they're supposed to be soldiers, usually is what we're finding. It's not like we're finding them at home with their college sweatshirts on and being like, hey.
Well, that's the movie I want to see.
How's it going, Ted?
So the leader of the Chitauri, he wants the, and I don't, is it Tessacrat, Tessacariot? What is it? Because I feel like they all said it differently.
Tesseract.
Oh, Tesseract. So the blue box. He wants the blue box. And if Loki gives it to him, then he'll give him an army so that Loki can be the king of the world. And they mentioned this ally that's willing to take over. And I turned to you and I asked, oh, is that this guy? So they give him this stick and it's got a glowing ball that kind of looks like it's got the same stuff as the blue cube. And it's got a blade on the end and they give it to him and he can use it as his little kingly scepter. So we cut to a research facility with those huge satellite dishes from that movie Contact, which made me wish that I was watching the movie Contact. Have you seen that movie? You haven't?
No.
Oh my gosh, Keith, we are watching that movie. Oh, I love that movie so much.
Oh, geez.
We are watching it.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we are. No, we are, because you made me watch this.
Okay, we're watching.
Is it too late to switch? What was I talking about? Contact, yes.
Anything but this movie.
So Nick Fury, who is played by Sam Jackson, shows up and we see...
You're the only person who calls him Sam Jackson.
We're on a nickname basis.
Okay.
Samuel Jackson shows up and we see that Dr. Eric Selvig from Thor, who I call Stellar Skateboard. I listened to a podcast called How Did This Get Made? And they did coverage on that movie about the sharks and Stellan Skarsgård is in it. And they kept calling him Stellar Skateboard because his name's really hard to say. Since then, people hack into his Wikipedia page and change his name to Stellar Skateboard every once in a while.
What do I have a feeling when you cut this together, it's going to be like 50 minutes of asides and like 5 minutes of this movie.
That's what I do. So he has the blue cube and is experimenting with it. And the government wants to use it for clean energy or something like that. But it has turned itself on and they can't get it to shut down. So everyone is running around like chickens with their heads cut off because they're evacuating. But Fury is concerned about getting out what he calls phase two. And we don't quite know what it is yet, but everyone's kind of like, okay, buddy, like, is that really important right now? And he's like, well, so far as I know, the world hasn't ended yet. So yes, that's important. The Tesseract. The blue cube. I can't. Starts to shoot this beam across the room, which Loki has used to transport himself to Earth. And he immediately uses his little scepter to zap Barton, who's played by Mr. Jeremy Renner, and Selvig, which brainwashes them and they become a minion. So they start fighting off the shield people. And Selvig, he packs up the Blue Cube, and they jump in a Jeep, and they all need to get out because the portal is collapsing on itself and the whole place is going to blow. That's why everybody's been, like, running around trying to evacuate. So Agent Hill, who's played by Kobe Smulders, which she was in Friends from College, which I don't know if we've talked about this before, but it is one of my favorite shows of all time. So again, I wished I was watching Friends from College. The episode where they go to the winery. Because they do, like, this little slow motion shot, and they're all wearing, like, nice, like, Texas grandma, like, bedazzled wine-themed shirts that they picked up at a winery, and they're walking in slow motion, like a superhero pack with their wine glasses. So she realizes that Barton and Selvig have turned and alerts everybody, and then there's, like, this really long car chase in a tunnel, and Fury jumps out of this helicopter before it blows to pieces and crashes, and everyone gets out of the facility and before it's eaten up by this sinkhole of atomic gamma energy rays.
Wow. Okay, you made that up, but okay.
That's all I heard the whole time they were talking about science. So cut to Natasha Romanoff, who is played by Scarlett Johansson, and she's supposed to be Russian?
She's supposed to be.
But she doesn't have an accent.
Not at all. She's created a very interesting character in Black Widow, but it is definitively not the Black Widow from the comics. So,
So she's in the middle of being interrogated / tortured by some Russian thugs, and they get a phone call, and it's for Natasha, and it's Coulson. And at first, he's, you know, they're in the middle of, like, an interrogation. He's like, "You better put her on the phone, or I'll blow you to smithereens." So he puts her on the phone, and she's like, "What?" And they're like, "We need you to come in." And she whines that she's working and she's in the middle of an interrogation and this moron's giving up everything because her specialty is getting the bad guys to monologue. And the thug is offended and denies that he's giving up anything. And Coulson tells her that Barton has been compromised. So she asks him to please hold, and she beats everybody up, gets back on the phone, and Coulson tells her, "You go get the big guy," which means the Hulk. So, cut to India. Bruce Banner, played by Mark Ruffalo, is being led by this little girl who has begged him to save her father's life. And she brings him right up to Natasha, who then tries to recruit him to help find the Blue Cube, since he's the expert in gamma radiation. And he's a little wary because he's not sure if this is a trick to capture the Hulk or not.
Very true.
So the world leaders, they don't like this whole idea, but Nick Fury is going to go ahead with the Avengers Initiative, which is getting the Avengers together as a crime-fighting team of superheroes to save the world. Well, that could have been the pitch.
Yeah, it's more than, like, crime-fighting. It's meant to be, like, the nuclear option. Is it's like when something's going to happen that they can't handle, this group comes together to take care of it.
Oh, like when we're at threat level midnight. Or whatever.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like the last option.
So we cut to Steve Rogers, who's played by Chris Evans, and he's destroying a punching bag, many punching bags in a gym. He has them all lined up, and as he destroys them, he just hangs another one up. And Fury gets him to join the team. Meanwhile, Coulson interrupts Tony Stark, played by RDJ, Robert Downey Jr., and our pal Gwyneth, Pepper Potts. They're having a champagne toast, and there's a lot there, but we don't have time. So, she decides, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to go. You have a lot of homework that Coulson has just dropped in your lap." I just want to take this moment to say that I really do love Coulson. And I love the relationship between he and Potts. She calls him Phil, and Tony Stark's like, his first name is Agent. So Rogers is on his way to S.H.I.E.L.D., and Coulson is fangirling a little bit. And then we find out later that Coulson has some Captain American trading cards. They're vintage. And he would really love it if Steve would sign them for him.
Took him a couple years to collect them.
They've got some foxtailing on them.
They're near mint, so yeah.
So back at Evil Headquarters, which is what I'm calling it, Loki is called away to another meeting with the Other. And they are getting impatient, but Loki promises them a glorious battle if they just wait. The Other threatens that if he doesn't come through, then that him guy will do something so horrible he'll long for the sweetness of just plain old pain. The team assembles at what looks like an aircraft carrier, but ends up being Wonder Woman's invisible plane.
So that is the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier. So it's basically an aircraft carrier, and then it flies in the comic books. So that was a total geek moment to actually see that being represented in movies.
But it's
so,
invisible, like Wonder Woman's
from the
plane.
Bottom, yeah.
Okay. So so it's, I'm going to call it Wonder Woman's plane from now on. So anyway, they all get situated, and then they start to search for the blue cube and Loki. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, at evil headquarters, Selvig tells Loki that he needs iridium, and he has become kind of like this cult member, saying things like, oh, the Tessaquerit is showing me so much. It's not just knowledge, it's truth. So the Avengers finally locate Loki in Germany, and he's at a museum. And I guess because that's where they're going to get the iridium from?
You kind of missed it. So we've got two scenes happening at the same time. We have Hawkeye, who's brainwashed Clint Barton, who's brainwashed breaking into a facility.
Oh, see, I thought he was at the museum with Loki.
No. And okay. Loki goes to this.
Well, it was like in a fight scene, so I was just like, ugh.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he went to the bathroom. A lot of action. Point.
No. I paused it every time you went to the bathroom. You tried several times, and I was like, no. We're going to pause this, and then when you come back, I'll play it again.
Okay, so they're stealing iridium. The Avengers show up, though, and after a long fight scene where they make a huge mess, break a bunch of stuff, they bring Loki in as a prisoner. And I was like, okay, even I know that he is letting them bring him in. This is way too easy. This must be part of a plan. So they're flying him back to the Wonder Woman plane when Thor, played by Liam Hemsworth. Look, if you want
Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, Chris Hemsworth. Whatever. I don't know. Shows up, and he's going to take matters into his own hands because that's his brother. And later on, Tony Stark tells him that, well, Loki killed 80 people in 2 days. And then Thor says, well, he's adopted. They have a brawl over who's going to take him, and they end up back at the Wonder Woman plane where they lock Loki up in this impenetrable cell that was actually, I guess, built for the Hulk?
Mm-hmm.
They keep saying?
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, everyone acts like Banner is an indentured servant. And Natasha keeps talking about how much she's got too much red in her ledger. So I'm just wondering, is everybody there because they have to pay back a debt?
They're not being forced to. They're trying to make right from what happened in the past.
All right. So Stark and Thor are trading barbs. One of my favorite was, hey, no hard feelings, Point Break. You got a mean swing.
Mm-hmm.
So Stark places some sort of bug or tracking, hacking device on the computers while he's talking sciencey things.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also, I think at that point, he accuses an underling of playing Gattaca? Mm-hmm.
Gattaca.
And he's like, you thought no one would notice.
And they later had to go and film a scene of the guy playing Gattaca just because he said it.
He goes back to playing Gattaca. So Stark and Banner are working together, and Stark keeps trying to poke the bear. He literally pokes him with this electric thing. And Rogers doesn't think it's very funny because they're stuck on this Wonder Woman plane with him. And if he turns into the Hulk.
So this isn't a plane. So
it's flying.
It's an aircraft carrier.
It's flying.
So when they pick up Loki, it's a little plane. It's a Quinjet.
Yeah, and then they bring him to the Wonder Woman plane.
It's not a Wonder Woman plane.
Okay. Well, an aircraft carrier is basically a boat. Right?
No.
It goes in the water.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a truck then?
Keep going, helicarrier. We're going.
Stark questions Fury's intentions and is working on uncovering all of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s secrets. And that's why he placed the bug on the computer earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So they continue to argue amongst themselves, which you're right. They spend the whole movie trying to get it together, which may be part of Loki's plan, I feel like. He's using their animosity towards each other. Stark and Banner continue to trade woes about their superhero ailments. And Stark thinks Banner's power is really cool and he should probably embrace it and work on controlling it and harnessing it. Because maybe the Hulk saved Banner's life for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, for what? And he's like, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out. So Natasha pays Loki a visit again. She uses her interrogation powers to get him to monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets him to, she basically finds out that his plan is he's going to use the Hulk against them. So then in another scene, the Avengers press Fury about the Phase 2, which it's not a clean energy project. They are making weapons of mass destruction. And Fury explains that when Thor showed up, they all realized that the Earth needs to be protected against hostile alien forces. And everyone gets in on the argument, which I think, again, is part of Loki's plan. And just then, Loki's minions attack the Wonder Woman plane. Sorry, the aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm. Helicarrier, yes.
And Barton blows out one of the engines. So Stark and Rogers have to fix the plane from the outside, which is no big deal for Stark because he's in the suit and he's got the rocket boosters and everything. But... And I say this again, Steve Rogers is just a regular human, and he is jumping from level to level on the outside of a plane that's thousands of feet in the air and also fighting off bad guys and not falling off the plane. And I'm, again, he just has super strength and a boomerang shield. He's not like a superhero. So I just...
Number one, that's why he's Captain America. That's like the point, is it's like he's doing these heroic things. Although I agree, if I was him, I would have like a friggin' harness on or something.
Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, Banner is...
And just quick point.
Yeah.
You think he has a boomerang shield? Is it?
Did I hear that? He throws it.
Well, that's because it's skill. It's skill. He's doing geometry.
It's
and...
a boomerang. Thor has a boomerang hammer.
Well, that's enchantment. Like, Cap is using muscles and geometry.
All of this. Muscles and geometry and enchantment.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Banner is so stressed out that he transforms into the Hulk and he tries to kill Natasha.
Mm-hmm.
And he's destroying everything in his path. She gets away from him. Thor steps in and he's trying to slow him down. And Natasha actually runs into Barton and they have this big fight. Fight, 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 fight. And he ends up hitting his head really hard. And when that happens, I was like, oh, she knocked some sense into him. And then in the next scene, he is no longer under Loki's spell because she hit him on the head really hard. And she calls it cognitive reprogramming.
Yeah.
Basically, I hit you on the head really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm getting so much better at this. So they eventually get the Hulk off the plane. I'm not going to get into it, but finally they get him off the plane. And they restart the engine, but Loki tricks Thor and escapes. Unfortunately, Loki kills Coulson, which I didn't believe at first, and it made me really upset. And then I had a question because, you know, he's in the S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
Mm-hmm.
So when did the S.H.I.E.L.D. show happen? When's that in the timeline? Does he come back to life?
So.
Is this a long answer?
I'm desperately trying to shorten it. Basically, Marvel has two entertainment divisions. They have one producer they let do the TV shows and one producer in charge of the movies.
Okay. And they don't talk.
And so they were being forced at first to work together.
Uh-huh.
But in the movie universe, Coulson's dead once and that's it.
Uh-huh.
And when they first started the TV show, they were working to make sure it was the same continuity as the movies.
Yeah.
And then they just stopped.
Went off the rails.
They went off the rails. So within the MCU universe, the movies, he is killed at this
That's
moment.
That's so sad. I didn't know that. You didn't prepare me. I was upset.
I'm sorry.
I didn't believe that he was dead. I was like, oh, no, he's not dead. He's coming back. He's fine because he's in the S.H.I.E.L.D. show. So Fury uses Coulson's death to kind of guilt trip them into working together as a team, finally, and get this thing done.
Which Coulson said he had to do. That's Coulson was dying. He said it was never going to work. This had to happen.
Yeah.
To get Iron Man and Captain America and Hawkeye and Black Widow on the same page.
I'm going to cry. So Loki is using the blue cube to open up a wormhole above Stark Tower. I know I'm skipping a lot of stuff, but okay. Otherwise, this episode will be 5 hours long.
Mm.
So the Chitauri enter through this wormhole and they begin to attack New York. And they ride on these matrixy flying eels. And I was like, are they organic? Are they machines? Are they hybrids? Like, what are they? They look like eels.
Yeah, there's these huge eels. And then they have like these speeder bike-ish type of sleigh things they're also using to fly in and shoot. Yeah. Shoot and kill everybody.
So the gang shows up and takes on the alien invasion by themselves. They have a very long fight scene and they make a huge mess and all these citizens are running everywhere. And one citizen I recognized is Ashley Johnson, and she played Chrissy Seaver in Growing Pains.
Because
you were like, oh, who is that? And I was like, I know exactly who that is. And then I looked it up and I was right.
You were right.
So Banner transforms into the Hulk and beats Loki up, and Natasha shows up at the tower and she finds Selvig, who is no longer under Loki's mind control. And I was like, oh, he must have hit his head. And he tells her that she can close the wormhole with Loki's scepter. And Loki, as he was getting beat up by the Hulk, conveniently left it outside of Tony Stark's apartment on the ledge.
I mean, Hulk literally took Loki by the cape and threw him into the ground like 12 times, which was so hilarious in the theater because everyone's expecting this epic fight scene.
And he just smashes
him. And he stops him mid-monologue and just beats the crap out of him.
So meanwhile, the world leaders have had enough, and they order a nuke to blow up Manhattan. And I was like, but that's not going to do anything about the wormhole.
Mm.
So Stark grabs the nuke. I know I'm skipping a lot of stuff.
I'm not stopping.
And he takes it up through the wormhole, and then he's in space, even though he knows it's a one-way trip. And Jarvis asks him if he wants to call Pepper Potts.
Mm-hmm.
And so they try her, but she's like in horror glued to the news coverage, and she misses the call
because mm-hmm.
her phone's on silent.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I would jump on the phone. Like, if I was her, I would like try to jump on the phone to call him, but whatever.
Well, he's kind of busy fighting off an alien invasion, so.
She's like, hey, what are you doing? When are you coming home?
I do agree. You probably would need that, like, in your hand just in case something like
yeah,
that would
happen. Yeah, what if he calls?
Exactly.
Yeah, so anyway. I mean, you never know what you're going to do in a catastrophe. So he throws the nuke at the huge alien invasion. And I was like, well, he better get out of there because, like, even if you're miles and miles and miles away from a nuclear, like, you're going to disintegrate, right? Or be radioactive or something.
I forgot and who knows what the range of this particular, different nukes have different ranges. Oh, so yeah, but
gamma ranges.
But you would want to get out of the way. Yes.
Yeah. So he throws it at that because he doesn't get out of there before it blows up. So it blows up. They're holding the wormhole open because they want to make sure he gets back out. But it's like the time they have to close it. Otherwise we're going to get the nuclear blast or mm-hmm. I don't know. So Natasha closes the wormhole, and we see as it closes in the last second, Stark falls through the wormhole. Mm-hmm. But he's unconscious and he's mm-hmm. falling in the atmosphere. And so Hulk jumps up into the air and snatches him out of the sky. And he's laying there and they're all looking at him. And then Hulk goes, "Aah!" And that startles him away. And then Stark asks if it's over because he'd really like to try some shawarma. So Loki sits up. He's been stunned a little bit because he's been bashed about 12 times into the floor. He sits up and he finds the Avengers surrounding him and they're all glaring at him. And he's like, oh, if you don't mind, if it's all the same to you, I'll take that drink now. Because mm-hmm. Stark had offered him a drink earlier to distract him. So they give the blue cube back mm-hmm. to Thor. And he has a handcuffed and muzzled Loki. Mm-hmm. And they transport back to Asgard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they're going to punish him themselves. So the Avengers all go their separate ways, and the world leaders want to know where they are. But Fury says that he's not tracking them. And they aren't very happy that the blue cube and Loki left this planet. But Fury wasn't about to argue with the god who took them. And they argue that the Avengers are dangerous, and Nick agrees and says, yeah, and now every world will know it, not just ours. And so then Agent Hill, she's worried and asks Fury, well, what happens if we need them again? And Fury says, so stupid, I want to cry. Fury says, well, they'll come back. And Hill asks, well, are you sure about that? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, why? And he says, because we'll need them too.
Mm-hmm.
He's an eternal optimist. That's Sam Jackson.
Wow.
So the last shot is Stark Tower, and all the letters have fallen off except for the A, which is the Avengers, which is in the Avengers font, which you got very excited and were like, so see that A is the, and I was like, I know my fonts. So there is a mid-credit scene where the other is telling his boss that the Earth is not to be messed with. And the boss turns around and it's this guy.
It's Thanos. There you go.
And then there's a post-credit scene where the Avengers are sitting around eating shawarma.
You'll notice Chris Evans just had his hand directly over his mouth the whole time.
Uh-huh.
And it was because he was in another movie where he had to grow a mustache or beard.
Oh.
And so he's the only one not eating, and he's constantly trying to move and act like this is normal for him, but he's just literally covering his face.
Oh, he looks like he's thinking. They all look like they're lost in thought while they're chewing their shawarma. It's always any Marvel movie, really, especially this one, because it's got so many stories coming together.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a real lot to process.
It is.
Especially if you have no background knowledge, mm-hmm. which I have. Not. However, comma, mm-hmm. they do a good job of world building and bringing non-comic people up to speed, such mm-hmm. as myself. I did think that it was engaging and it did keep me interested. And I was like, oh, is that it when it was over? I thought that the script was very snappy and amusing. And I mm-hmm. enjoyed the banter between the characters. And I felt like everybody in this movie is likable, even Loki.
Yeah, he unfortunately becomes too likable, and they kind of change the character who he is. But like this movie, this movie and the original Thor movie really do a good job of painting the Loki character as he is in the comics. And then as time goes on, just too many...
Everyone's like, oh, that Loki.
Yeah, too many women fall deeply in love with him. And so he has to change over time, which is unfortunate.
And he has such greasy hair. But anyway, I felt like there was way too many long, drawn-out fight sequences and chases and everything, where everything gets destroyed. And you know how I feel about that. I can't watch that without thinking about, like, who's going to clean this up? Like, this is such a freaking mess.
And you'll find out about that in the Spider-Man movie that we'll watch in a little bit.
Oh, but, do they clean it up?
Yeah, you'll find out about it later.
A movie about housework.
It is, actually. Great. It's the opening visage. So, and I was really impressed that you understood why Loki gets himself captured. And it's to try to drive a wedge between the heroes. Because them coming together, he knows, is the only thing that can really stop him. And so you got that. So I was very impressed by that.
Oh, wow. I got it. Something?
You did.
I'm smart.
You are.
I think they made it super obvious, though.
They do mention it like 5 times in the movie, but you still got it.
The only other thing was I was a little confused and you were like, well, the script can't be perfect. How all of a sudden the Hulk can now control himself?
Absolutely true.
Because he went from trying to kill Natasha to, oh, I'm going to kill the bad guys. And I was like, well, maybe he got all of his rage out on the eel. And then he's like, oh, okay, cool. Well, I'm just going to go after the bad people and not just try to kill everybody. Because then he saves Stark. And
I wish there would have been something so that that made more sense. Because in the middle of the movie, you know, the great line of, it's time to get angry. And Banner looks back and says, that's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry. It's like, it's a great movie line.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
No, it's just one of those.
I was like, oh, what?
It's one of those lines that makes.
So you can control it then?
I know.
Because you're always angry.
Which means the other thing doesn't make sense anymore. Right. I mean, and understand, it explains why he...
Maybe he's starting to control it.
Yeah. See, that's why I still think... In
because
this,
he had the pep talk with Stark.
Yeah.
So I guess now it's time to rate the movie.
There was one other thing that I just didn't think they...
Here we go.
...got at. Well, number one, it is probably one of the best scripts that Josh Whedon has ever written. One of the issues I felt like was when Coulson dies... It's a little sad, but I wish he would have been more of a focus the whole movie so that it really meant something.
It makes all of them so sad.
Yeah. And again, it's such an impossibly crowded script. Clark Gregg's death was kind of like, oh, but it was kind of like, oh, you know, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they killed him.
Well, I felt like that.
Clark Gregg, who's amazing.
I felt like that, Clark Gregg. So my rating for this movie, I would say 1 thumb up. Because of all the reasons aforementioned.
Mm-hmm.
And then 1 thumb in the middle. Because, again, this is not my type of movie. I am not interested in 20-minute fight sequences. I don't like when they destroy things. Because I'm just like, oh my God, that's such a mess.
Mm-hmm.
There's glass everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You broke that person's car. What's that person going to do now? And then you blew up the bus. So they can't even take the bus. So, yeah.
Manners, people. Manners.
Manners maketh a man. So, but yeah. 1 thumb up, 1 thumb in the middle, which I think is pretty good for not wanting to watch any Marvel movies. And yet now I've watched 4?
Watched Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, and the Avengers.
Dear God. What are you doing to me?
You want to go grab some shawarma? I don't know what it is, but I saw a place earlier.
I do want some shawarma, actually. What was our theme? Gwyneth Paltrow and Mark Ruffalo.
There you go. That was the theme for this week. Did you enjoy Gwyneth Paltrow more in Avengers or in A View from the Top?
She wasn't really in Avengers very much. She was. I liked that she was barefoot because that's how I roll. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I looked at you every time we saw she was barefoot.
But I think you were right. I think it was because she's taller than... her men, so she has to not wear shoes.
Not only did she not wear shoes, but you could tell that
she was bending down.
No, RDJ had lifts in his sneakers, so I could see that too. So
I didn't notice. She's all right, but yeah, I love her in A View from the Top.
Yeah, so. I think so too. And Mark Ruffalo, I think, was equally charming in both movies.
He's just always now. Okay, question.
Yes.
Have you seen 13 Going on 30?
No.
Okay, well, we are watching that.
Oh God.
He's in it.
All right.
His kind eyes are in there.
Okay.
So, and Jennifer Garner.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a good one to watch in the future, but not in the near future, because we're mm-hmm. going to do an Irish-themed show next time.
Right on.
So you get to watch one of my favorite Janeane Garofalo movies. I have seen it so many times. I had it on VHS. And recently just had to purchase it off Amazon, but I think it's another one of those pirated DVDs that look like a real DVD. Mm-hmm. But who cares, because now I have it, because you can't find it anywhere. Mm-hmm. But it's called The Matchmaker. And it's got Dennis Leary in it, Janeane Garofalo, and some other people.
I am sure there is no awkward social situations throughout this movie, since the preview made me poop twice.
Were you watching the preview from the hallway?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You're stretching yourself. You're mm-hmm. growing. Mm-hmm. And then I get to watch. I don't know. Did I see this movie? I don't remember. I know we had a...
I think if you did, you probably threw up. we're going to watch The Boondock Saints.
When we first started dating, you had a St. Patrick's Day party. And mm-hmm. you guys did. It was a Boondock Saints party.
Yeah, there were some elements. I may have had the hand tattoos at the time, so yes.
That you drew on with Sharpie.
Hey, that looked just like the movie.
Yet you will not get a tattoo.
You don't put a bumper sticker on a Ferrari. You just let it speak for itself. Okay. So
we have a Facebook page.
We do.
We have an Instagram page.
We do.
Just look up He Saw, She Saw. You'll find it. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening to us. Please, if you could, rate and review. That would be wonderful. If you do that, we get on some sort of chart.
Oh, wow.
Like, it puts us on the map.
We can be charted.
We can be charted.
Nice.
So, if you guys could do that, that would be awesome. For our mm-hmm. birthdays are coming up. So
there you go. Birthday
if
present.
You could do that for our birthday. That would be great.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And we'll talk at you next week.
Bye.
Avengers Assemble. Wah-ha-ha.
Very good. Thank you. You going to go clean your fish tank or?
Nope.
Okay.
That's your job.